It's the Steve Cochran podcast, and I welcome my friend John Williams because John, it's time for deeply personal questions that are none of my business. How are you?
Hey, good to see you.
Nice to see you. You and I have worked together on and off for a long time. The off part was when I got fired.
Well, you could say that about half of the industry, Steve.
But it's interesting because we're at a point now on the calendar here in early December where it's been 10 years since Spike Odell left the building.
Yeah.
And there was some talk that I was going to do that show, and then you did that show for a while.
For 6 or 7 months.
What was that like?
Worst 6 or 7 months of my life.
This was part of the dark days of WGN, and it was a shame because I think either one of us would have had a lot of fun from back then.
I think so. You know, it's so then the station lost its way for a little while because then after I did it, a guy named Greg Jarrett did it, and then from Greg it was you, right?
No, Bremer.
Oh, God. God bless them all. But yeah, it would have been, you know, if you had hindsight, you'd just say, put me or put you in the morning show, take our lumps and let's, and today we would be in an even better position. Although you're doing a great job. Yeah, I am pleased, happy, and amazed at all of the things you've accomplished in time you've been in that seat.
Thank you. It's 5 years already.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And how many shows, Steve, do you count?
I do. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's a, I think the technical term is it's a crap load. Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's do this. Let's talk a little bit about where this all began. Am I right about this? You were Bob Collins' intern?
That's right. Well, and Wally Phillips and Roy Leonard's. I was an intern at the radio station.
Rotating?
Kind of, yeah. And
who'd you start with? Which show?
Well, I was at Bradley Place. It was at the TV station, and you were a WGN intern. So you were working for radio and TV. So I worked on the community affairs side, so they would do a book show, or they would do a what was the name of the show? Peter Nunes did the show, and it was in Spanish, and I was the floor director. I didn't even know what the hell they were talking about. I answered the mail, and then I would sit in on Roy Leonard's or Bob's show.
Did you know your primary interest was radio?
Yeah.
Because you were a kid at that point.
Yeah.
All right, so
I knew I wanted to do this.
Who's the first person that you walk into? Is it Roy Leonard? As far as doing an internship on that show?
The first show that I really got to sit and watch was probably Wally Phillips.
How intimidating was
it? Oh, my God. I could not believe what I was seeing, and that is the words coming out of those faces. You know, we'd heard them, and they were the very best in the business, and I was on the other side of a pane of glass watching them do it. I was starstruck.
I was always fascinated because I didn't grow up here. So I knew of Wally and like John Landecker's Boogie Check. Yeah. I would occasionally hear Wally when I could pick up the GN signal in upstate New York. But when I hear tapes of Wally and how he did that show, I have no idea how he pulled that off. Was it that complex to watch? I mean, choreographed, right? You got a record turner moving in. You got these union folks in and out. And Wally's got to be thinking ahead enough to know what he wants and where he wants it.
Yeah, it was pretty seamless. And even as I sat there, I didn't know exactly how he was pulling it off. And you're right. He had a record turner. They had a union. This is 79 or 80. And if he was going to play a song, he didn't hit the button. His producer didn't hit the button. His engineer didn't hit the button.
Right.
A record turner hit the button. And it was a record player, and he'd cue up the album, a James Taylor song.
Where did the record turner sit or stand?
He sat in the studio at a like 2 or 3 turntable bay. And his job was to have the next song ready for a 4-hour show that would play 3 or 4 songs.
So what did he do in between?
Smoked and read the paper.
The amazing thing about Wally's show is all of that stuff that people in Chicago grew up listening to that they thought was completely ad-libbed and of the moment. If I understand this correctly, Wally had one place he'd go to breakfast every morning. And he'd go to breakfast and he'd get his game face on every morning at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, true.
And people would not come and sit with him. They'd let him go do his thing.
They didn't sit with him at lunch either.
And then he'd go in, he'd do his thing.
He'd do his show and then he'd come out. He'd go to his office. Marilyn was his producer. And
the great Marilyn Miller.
She would kind of, you know, she ran interference for him. You really didn't just pop in and say hi to Wally.
So did you like say, Mr. Phillips, thank you for allowing me in. I'm hoping to do this someday. Or was that not what you did back then?
After the internship. I mean, there was always that pane of glass.
Okay.
These guys were much less accessible than you and I are to the interns
today. Yeah.
Right? And So after the internship, I got a chance to make an appointment, and I could go into Mr. Phillips' office, and I could talk to him and take notes.
So Bob Collins is doing the afternoon show at that point?
Yeah.
You end up in the same position at some point with Bob Collins. Two very different people, as I understand it. Because my experience with Wally was very limited. Same with Bob. But in the latter years with Wally, when I think he was doing a weekend show, he couldn't have been nicer to me.
And he was, and Wally wasn't a bad guy. He was what he was. You know, he was an introvert. He didn't mix easily with people. So Bob was on the same plateau. I mean, maybe Bob was the shiniest star of them all.
Sure.
He was irreverent. He was funny. They couldn't believe that guy was on this radio station.
But he seemed more intimidating to me, was he?
Only because he was garrulous, and he could own any room he was in, and he would. Bob would go to lunch at the Channel 9 cafeteria and sit with the cafeteria workers and break the table up. You know, just anybody could sit with Bob. But Bob was always the funniest, the fastest, the smartest.
Right.
You know, he was an entertainer. Wally was quiet. Wally sat by himself.
But I had this sense with Bob that it was planned disorganization. In other words, in his head, he wanted it to sound loose. And aren't we having a good time here? And let's see what happens next. But he knew what he was doing.
There's an incident. That is so true, Steve. And one memory that really cements that in my mind is he and his news guy. And I'll think of the name in a second. Do you know who was doing news? He was really good. They had a nice repartee. And they're just shooting the shit, having a fun time on the radio. And really funny, really clever. Then the record turner drops a record and the music is playing. And I'm thinking, okay, you guys got a 38-second ramp here.
Right.
They're nowhere near being done talking about what they're talking about.
Right.
And I'm just counting it down in my head going, he's never made a mistake. How can he get out? How can he manage this?
Yeah, because you hear the vocal coming.
And he did. And Bob said something. The other guy said something. They both laughed really hard. It was spontaneous. The laughter comes to a peak.
Vocals
start.
Yeah, I mean, it's artistry.
And I thought, if I had planned that all day long, I wouldn't have hit it. And he did it on the fly.
Right.
So you kind of knew he was always kind of, he had like a chess player. He knew what the next things were, but boy, it sure seemed like an ad lib.
And Roy Leonard, you talk about three people being different people. Roy Leonard, to me, and again, my experience later in life for Roy, was here's the coolest guy in the room.
Yeah.
You know, show business savvy, pop culture savvy.
They were all good
Chicago
interviewers.
Chicago savvy.
Yeah, absolutely. And nationally, you know, when entertainers came to town, James Taylor brought his guitar into the studio because he wanted to play a song with Roy. You know, that's just the way it
Bob
was.
Bob Hope always demanded to talk to Roy when he came through town.
It's funny, you know, the big stars came here. I still think we are as good at what we do now as they were then, but the world has changed.
Yeah.
They don't have to come and do a radio interview. There's the internet and there's other ways to get exposure, but they knew if they wanted to get exposure. Roy Leonard, if you sold a book, you had to go on Roy Leonard's show if you wanted to have sales in Chicago. I may be mistaken, but I think he worked out a deal where he got a cut of the action at a lot of the stores.
I sure hope he did.
And everybody won. And when that broke, it was a little bit of a scandal, but it was marketing, and we got the great interviews, and I didn't see any great harm in it. But Roy was maybe of them all the best interviewer.
Yeah, I would agree with that, what I know.
You don't want to take anything away because Bob was good and Wally was seamless, but Roy just was so intuitive. He was a classic.
As a kid, when you sit down with these guys individually, who'd you learn the most from?
Boy, you learned something new from all of them, didn't you? I mean, even Eddie Schwartz and Bill Berg and Steve and Johnny who were floating around the station back then. Maybe Roy, because he seemed to do it all, and because I've try to be as good an interviewer as I can.
Right.
And
you're a great interviewer.
And,
give yourself some credit.
You don't do what you and I do if you don't listen and anticipate.
That's exactly right.
And that's what Roy did.
So you go to Peoria when? Did you work radio before Peoria, or was Peoria your first gig?
So that was my internship. Then I went back for one more year of college, graduated from Carbondale, got a job at WSPY in Plano, Illinois.
Okay.
Did
and
a year
good
of that.
Morning, Plano. What show were you doing?
An automated, I ran commercials and played tapes.
What time of day?
Well, from 2 to 8 p.m. I always had the afternoon shift.
Right. and part of the midday shift as well. Today.
Oh, yeah. Eventually, I got to do the morning show there, and that was really my entree into what we do now.
Do you remember what you made? Because my first job at WTKO in Ithaca, New York, the station I grew up on, I was making minimum wage at the time, which I believe was maybe $2.10 an hour,
yeah.
$2.05 an hour, something like that.
Well, I remember my salary because when I left Plano to go for my first full-time talk show gig in Peoria, so I was in Plano for a year, did the mornings, that worked out, I got a job in Peoria, and we did that sophisticated negotiation where they write the number down on a piece of paper.
Right.
And I remember these words came out of my mouth because he slid the number over to me. And I said, I was hoping to see a three. And by that, I mean something above 12,000.
Right.
I saw that two and went, I got to figure that out.
In your head, you said, I was hoping to see a three, or
no,
you said it out loud?
Those words came out of my mouth.
And what was the response?
Yeah. The job comes at that wage, and you have to change your name.
Were you going by Filipich at that point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did you feel about changing your name?
I said, I don't know anybody else. You know, how can I do that? How can I relate? They said, find another name. I said, all right, how about Phillips? Because that sounds like my last name.
Right.
They said, nah, we've got a Bob Phillips that does news there, and there's this guy, Wally, so you can't be a Phillips. That's already been
done. Why'd you come up with Williams?
It's my middle name.
Ah, okay. And that way you don't have to explain at home, too, because you're still honoring the family.
A little bit. And it felt a little, personal.
Sure.
It's John Williams.
So what year are you going to Peoria then? 81?
Let's see. 77, 81, about 82.
82. And you did 10 years in Peoria?
Yeah.
Okay. So what convinces you to leave? Is it the job offer at GN?
Well, you know how.
Because you're a big fish in a medium-sized pond.
Which,
you own that town.
Not a bad way to be. That was the gamble when I left Peoria was, all right, now can you be a medium fish in a big pond?
Right.
You might drown in the big pond. But I was there for 10 years. I spent 9 of them trying to get out of there. Not because it was a bad place, but because that was the next evolution in my career.
And that's how you did it then.
That's what you do. So for 9 years, attention people who are frustrated by your inability to get up the ladder. For 9 years, probably 2 or 3 times a year, I'd send out my tapes and resumes, my latest ratings report, and after 10 years, I got out.
And who called you from WGN?
WCCO Minneapolis.
Oh, it was CCO first.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I went to Minneapolis, came back, and then I've gone back and forth from Minneapolis a couple times. But my first big break,
Were we in Minneapolis at the same time?
I think we were.
What years were you in Minneapolis?
Like 92 to 96 was first run.
You would have caught the end of my era.
Yeah.
From 92 to 93.
Of a Steve Cochran.
Yeah. I had a 5-year run.
What happened
to
you there?
We had creative differences. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand. That's the difference between you and me, of which there are many. But I've always been too careful about things. You know, that's a blessing and a curse. But I mean, creative differences. If they'd said, okay, we're doing Chinese country now, I am your Chinese country
but
boy.
Listen, people need to know this. You're the sniper. You have standards that I know you don't violate because, and here's one of the reasons I know you don't violate them, because I remember being in the office of the lovely and talented Mary June Rose on more than one occasion when she was bitching about you because she was upset with you about something.
What she could possibly be upset
about. Yeah, that's what I thought. But point being, you had what you wanted to do and you fought for it. And that's what you have to do.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, even when you win those battles, maybe you shouldn't. I mean, isn't the hardest part about what we do? It's not doing it. It's trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, totally. Completely.
You know, what works? Like, if you like sports and I don't like sports, should you be talking about sports? If I like books and everybody loves books, right? Now, a lot of people don't like books.
Right.
So you got to, if you want to talk politics and I don't want to talk politics, it's never been harder now.
Oh, my God.
Than it has been knowing what to do. It's not easy. That's why I admire I sometimes wish it was as easy as I think it must be at a sports station, because you know what you're talking about today.
Every day.
And if you were at WLS, you'd know that you're going to take a conservative angle on politics. And if you were, you know, a lot of stations kind of lay it out for you. WGN never has.
Because we have to be all things to all people.
Kind of.
Yeah. Make that salad every day.
Especially
so
now.
You got here when? Back at GN when from Peoria? What year?
90. So after I was at CCO for 4 years, I came here like in 92, 96, about 96, 97.
Okay, so you have 3 years you're doing Are you doing that early afternoon thing?
I was in Minneapolis for 4 years, and then I came down here.
Which shift were you doing when you got here?
What was I doing? I was doing just before Spike. I was doing like 1 to 4.
All right. So just so people get a sense of this, because everybody remembers where they were when Bob Collins died.
Yeah.
You're on the air from 1 to 4.
I go home that day. Walk into the kitchen, and Brenda tells me.
And she knew at that point. She got a call. Brenda's your wife, by the way.
Yeah. So I took the train home. Finally, get out back to LaGrange. Walk in the kitchen, LaGrange Park there, and she's standing in the kitchen. I'll never forget it. And she said, "They're saying on the radio that there's been a plane crash, and they can't find Bob's plane."
What goes through your head? The lamest question I'll ask you in this entire podcast.
I sat down and cried.
I mean, yeah.
I literally sat on the floor, and I just said, oh, no. And then I got back in the car and drove back to the station.
The amazing thing was, and I was just a satellite player at that point, because
were
I had
you on
taken
the air
a job,
here then?
I had taken a job in L.A. to go and follow Howard Stern on the station he was syndicated on at that point. Perfect fit for GN, don't you think? And I was doing a Sunday afternoon show here.
On our station.
Yeah. Mary Jane Rose brought me in to do that after I left.
Wait, when I think Sunday afternoons, I sure don't think of you.
Right. After I left AM 1000, which turned into ESPN Radio.
Yeah.
So I was here, and when Bob Collins died, I was not part of you guys. And I barely knew Bob, because Bob was the guy that was kicking my ass for all those years when I was doing the morning show. So I ran across him a couple times, and, you know, we all do that competitive thing where you see a competitor and you give him the male head nod,
hey. But
you're not going to go over and go, hey, you sound great. So when Collins died, I had an opportunity to do the first major thing I ever did here. You guys all rightfully were at the funeral, and I'm going to give Mary June credit for this, because I believe it was one of the many fine decisions she made. She knew that only a few people could be in that cathedral. And because of the love for Bob and what amounted to, and I don't say this flippantly, it was like a state funeral for Bob.
They lined up
because
off the
of
street.
Because of his age, because of how famous he was, and because of the tragic way that he died, it all came together. So we literally did, on this station, we did a play-by-play of the funeral. And I said, listen, I'm not Catholic. I'm a Christian, but I'm not Catholic. I need a priest who can literally explain what we're seeing. And at the old building at Tribune Tower, while you guys were at the funeral, we had monitors set up, and we went through the funeral. We broadcast the funeral live. And I swear to you, to this day, a week doesn't go by where somebody doesn't come up and go, you know, the first time I heard you was, and it meant so much to me. And to me, that's a microcosm of what this place is all about, being in touch with what matters most. And just in that case, it was deeply personal. And just the pain in the hallways for you guys, I can't imagine it.
Well, that's my first memory of you here, too.
The funeral? Because,
and I don't remember if it was us coming or going, because we were there. But I remember having the radio on and listening to you, and I thought, how about that? This Steve Cochran guy is anchoring our coverage, and it was good. And
it's the weirdest thing I've ever done on the radio, and I've done a few weird things, because who does a radio funeral, right?
And I felt like how hard that must be for you, because you hadn't been in the halls for 10 years. You'd been on Sundays for a few months.
Right. And I got the weight of it immediately because, one, I got the weight of this radio station. But and not knowing Bob personally, it probably helped on some level. I knew it mattered to people. And I knew there were people glued to the radio who wanted to hear it because it wasn't broadcast on TV for obvious reasons. But that was a ground shake and change here. And then you moved to the afternoon show. Spike moved to Bob's show.
Yeah.
And by the way, you and I have talked about this off the air. I don't know if we ever talked about it on the air, but to this day, one of the most amazing things I've seen is how Spike handled the fact that he knew Bob was gone during his show. Bob's wife had not been notified yet, or they hadn't been able to contact her. And I think an hour or more went by before it was announced at GN. Well, radio stations around town were announcing it already because they didn't care on some level. And then the next morning, a prominent Chicago television person wanted to do a story where she sat in Bob's chair. This is less than 24 hours later. And Spike and company said, no. I'm not sitting in that chair. Nobody's sitting in that chair. So Spike did the show from we had side-by-side studio setups, from the other chair, I don't know for how long, at least for a few days. And then Spike did the morning show. You were moved to afternoons that day, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then you did the afternoon
day.
Show. And And time went on. But it feel like, well, what are we supposed to do now? It must have felt like that.
Yeah, it wasn't the way. And, you know, Bob was at a point in his career where he, I think, was thinking about retiring someday. And I think everybody was sort of figuring out who goes where, what, when. And then it just happened like that. And I don't know that it happened the way it was going to happen, because Spike was so good in the afternoons. You know, mornings are regimented.
Yeah.
As you know, Steve, you've got to be a fine-tuned machine and adhere to a clock.
Yeah, because I do that so well.
And so the idea that Spike could do that, I think, was a leap of faith. You know, I would have been more disciplined,
yeah.
if nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I thought maybe if I get lucky and Bob sticks around long enough, I could get the morning show someday. Spike could stay in the afternoon and life would be great. And then that didn't happen.
Yeah, and it's odd, and I don't know that you would be able to identify with this because we're coming from different places on that, but I felt a comfortable... I turned down the job in Los Angeles to stay here, and I did that early midday show, whatever you would call it, leading into you at that point for several years, but there was an odd bit of comfort there, and I never really expressed that to any of you guys. But everybody's different people. It's a big radio station, one of the most important in the world. And you walk in, you walk out, you see people you work with every day. But I had a sense you guys bonded over losing Bob in a way that you hadn't been bonded before. True or not true?
I think so. I mean, how could you not, right? We were all pretty close. But, we were also, you are what you are. Kathy and Judy were Kathy and Judy. Bob and Spike were competitive. You know, every now and then Spike would roll his eyes at stuff Bob did and vice versa.
Sure.
As probably happens here now, too, right? So there was that. But yeah, if you ever wanted a sense of family, that made you realize how important we were to each other and how important Bob was to us. Yeah.
So we get through the dark days. You go to Minneapolis. I come back, and then you come back. And you know this. At least I hope you know this. I pushed hard for you to come back because I thought it was what this place needed. And I love what you're doing. And I love, you know, how you sound, because I think this is where you and I belong.
It's nice of you to say. I didn't know that. I don't know that. But I believe that.
Well, then I should have expressed it more vociferously before.
Yeah, you know, maybe Todd, our boss, had mentioned something like that. But I felt like when I looked at the lineup here, where you're doing the mornings, Rose doing the afternoon, Bill and Wendy were they doing both shifts?
They were at that point, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
I mean, they were filling the midday, and I'm not as funny as you guys, you know, so maybe I have a little bit more of a ponderous or thoughtful take on things. You know, the catchphrase we used to start the show is thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Right, right.
So it's like, okay, that's a niche that GN isn't really serving right now.
Right.
John's not a comic, but maybe we got enough comics. So if we carved out a little space, we could stick you there. So that's where I am now.
Are you comfortable? Are you having fun?
Yeah, I really do like it. I even like doing Saturdays.
I used to love doing a Saturday show. I mean, Saturdays around here was, it had a different flow, a different pace.
And it's so much, I know. And in fact, you get off a Saturday show and go, okay, I should do that all the time.
Yep.
But, you know, you can't and you don't, but it's fun to have a kind of loose show on Saturday.
So you mentioned politics. We live in the world we live in now because it's the world we live in. And you know how I feel about Mr. Trump. And I've tried to pare it back. I don't know if you've gone through this, but I am so...
I go through this every day.
The fatigue.
Yeah.
The fatigue
and
of
the pairing
talking
it back.
About it.
And the pairing it back.
But what do you do? Because I feel like we have a responsibility to remind the public of the problems we have right now. At the same time, I'm aware of the fact that a lot of folks just don't want to hear it.
Well, I think you have pared it back. There's no mistake.
But how do you do the balance? Because I don't know how to do the balance.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm only on for 2 hours.
So, yeah, well, that helps.
So there's 2 hours I don't have to think about because you were used to being on for 3 or 4.
Right.
So I look at my show as 4 half hours, and
that's
we could
smart.
Do 4 half hours on the politics of the day.
Every day.
And I say, if we're going to do this, and we should, you're right, we should, but let's make sure we have 1 half hour on the latest thing. But we don't have to do 2 half hours. It'll be there tomorrow. And Roe explodes at 3 o'clock every day without something
right.
about this.
Right.
What's happened?
Yelling and hand waving.
I mean, Bill and Wendy don't go there much at all.
That's true.
And I don't think anybody thinks that it's a great disservice. I look at it this way, Steve, that is the station, you know, from 6A to 6P or 24/7. Are we sort of being honest and serving that need to know what's going on in the world, including Donald Trump land? Yeah, I think we are. And can you get away from it for a couple of hours? Yeah, you can. Sometimes it feels like you can't, like it's a disservice. Like if in the future they play back the tape of 2018 and they randomly pick an hour of your show and the morning guy wasn't talking about the crisis that is Donald right. Trump. And they'd say, what the hell's the matter with those people? Are they right. blind to it? And you have to say, no, wait a minute. That's not how it is. I'm going to talk about this kid and I'm going to talk about this fun story for this hour. And Trump will come back.
Because we know he can't be ignored. He's like Glenn Close in the bathtub at the end of Fatal Attraction. You thought you had him. What do you do about social media? Because if we got caught up in reading the comments, you know how it is. You rarely can spend time just talking to people who tell you you're doing a wonderful job. What you really swim in is people that think you're terrible.
Well, do you have the text screen up in front of you?
I do.
I don't.
I think it's smart. It's
up in front of.
I think your version is smart.
Well, it's here's what I do. It's up in front of my producer's face. She sees all the poop and the relevant stuff
and tells you which ones you should pay attention
she
to.
She sorts it and prints it and walks it in.
That takes a lot of confidence in her from you that you don't feel like you're missing something.
Yeah, I know, because there are times where I go, all right, I need a reality check here.
Right.
But I think I've got a sense. I know when I'm missing and when I'm hitting. And, calls get through. Lord, hey, if you really want to speak your piece, just call. But people prefer to text. And it's just so much. We get so. What's your ratio for text to calls, would you say?
I take very few phone calls, and I'll tell you why. And I get a hard time about this because of the timing involved in the morning show. There's very little space to get a lot of things done. And I find that, and this is not a knock on the listeners, but if somebody comes in unprepared, I then have to take extra time to correct something they just said. And I'm not interested in an argument. I think I do both sides of the view. I should do more calls than I do, but I don't do a lot.
Well, don't do calls on politics. When you have taken calls about coffee cups, you're very funny.
Yeah, that's the interaction's good.
That's fun. So I would encourage you to do that. Thanks for asking. But
no, but the reason I think that you're comfortable with it is because you're really good at it and you do it every day on some level.
We don't take a lot of calls on politics either.
But you take calls every day.
I do. Absolutely, I do. Yeah, it's a different show. But it's me and Elif, for God's sakes.
Right.
And Bertrand.
Right.
And Violetta. And sometimes Kevin.
Yeah, so it's a small staff. 2 hours, you barely have time to talk.
Yeah.
Going forward in this, it's tough sometimes not to get caught up in, do we matter as much as we used to? Anytime I go out and meet this audience, and I think we should do it more than we do, I get reminded how much we matter. I hope you get the same thing.
I know you've said that a few times lately, and I feel that too. When we, for instance, you'll do this when you do your Christmas comedy show or your New
right,
Year's comedy
right,
show.
Right, right,
when I did my Jefferson and Roosevelt shows, the place is packed. They stand and cheer. They come up to the stage afterwards, or sometimes we sign pictures in the lobby afterwards.
Right.
And they wait in line. This is an ego stroke. It's just, I think it's a good reminder to you and me and Bill and Steve and everybody that they're still listening and they care. They want that relationship. They want to feel like they're part of your family.
Well, don't you think we work in a time where so much of the content-driven entertainment business, because we're all in show business, everybody's too hip for the room? I mean, how many people do you know our age who spend all day on Instagram and all day on Facebook and all day on Twitter? And I don't just mean this company. I mean movie studios, television studios. They all want to figure out how to maximize every platform possible, and they tend to forget about the core business. And if there's one thing I think we do still better than anybody is all the shows on this radio station currently, the daily lineup, sounds like WGN to me. WGN 2018-2019. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree.
I agree with you on that, but I wish I knew which of the platform was the, like, it was Facebook, then it was Twitter. I think, really, if you had to pick one now, it's Instagram.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't.
But I mean, the balance, again, how much time do you spend on it? Because you can't spend so much time on it, you lose track of the thing that matters most, and that's what's coming out of the speakers.
I think Anna said that one of her bosses, DeVlantis, who's on with Ro in the afternoon, when she was over at 7, they said, your day is three parts. Doing the TV, prepping the TV, and doing the social media. It was something like that. They had a formula. If we spent a third of our time, and you could.
Easily.
My poor producer Elif. She's here at night when I leave, still, you know, posting things for us and managing our social media accounts.
It's interesting too that you said that, because your producer Elif, I think, is in her mid to late twenties.
Yeah.
Does that help? Because she's so in touch with that, she grew up on it?
It does. And that's why Violetta and Kevin, for instance, Kevin does sports with Ro.
Kevin Paul, stolen from my show.
Violetta Padromeda. Yeah, that's right. He was your producer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, how producer about that? Did some sports.
What a nice talent he is.
He's very good.
Because
very
he's good. Really good at the sports. Was he a good producer for you?
No, he's a terrible producer. He's doing exactly what he should be doing.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm loving his life.
I don't know what he was like as a producer, but I know he's good on the air. And Violetta, you know, the, what is it, Ro called her, the Serbian sparrow. She kind of flits around. And every now and then she lands and it's just delightful. And I think those younger voices help us.
I'll leave you with this. We have been, obviously, we're blessed to have this job at this radio station, but we both grew up in a business that had just absolute legends. You talked about the people you interned for, but when you think about Chicago as a radio town, especially in the 80s and 90s, give me your three, of us 70s as well, give me your three favorite talents on the radio from Chicago radio in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah.
And by the way, we can't play that game. You and I can't be.
It's Steve Cochran.
Yeah, you can't be. We can't be on.
Well, the people that influenced me most when I was driving around in the car with my dad, going to and from things in Manuka High School, say, and I have memories of him and I just like dad was driving and I was in the car and GN or the radio was on, and it was Wally Phillips, it was Dave Baum.
Oh yeah, sure.
Over at WIND, yeah. Eddie Schwartz. You know, back then, like the kind of talk radio they were doing, people, they were inventing it as they were doing it.
Sure.
So I would say WIND and WGN were really influential. Who are you?
John Landecker. I think Landecker is still the greatest disc jockey I've ever heard in my life. And I was a disc jockey first.
Yeah. I thought Fred Winston and John Landecker were, if I could borrow a molecule of talent, I would have taken it from
Landecker
that.
Was unbelievable because he was Phil Donahue smooth and he did it in 12 to 20 second clips.
But didn't you think that Fred Winston's voice and he was, talk about being funny, talking
funny
up
in 10
a record.
Seconds.
In 10 seconds, talking up the record.
Yeah, it's great.
And it might just be his inflection. I laughed every single time I heard Fred Winston.
And Fred has one of those characteristics. I got to know Fred through the years. He's funny in the hallway.
Is he?
If you're funny in the hallway,
yeah.
And you can be funny on the radio in 10 seconds, that's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Funny guy. The other guy, though, that influenced me, because I didn't understand it, Larry Lujack. And what I mean by I didn't understand it is, how could that crank, that grumpy guy, be so compelling? And yet he was.
Yeah.
And it was a nice mix with Tommy Edwards and, you know, the good guy and the bad guy. But Larry seemed like he hated everything. But there was a side of Larry which I was attracted to. And then the other one, and you know, it's a little awkward maybe between us, but Brammeyer. Because Brammeyer, to me, was one of the greats. Now, I don't do – it's funny I say all of this because I don't believe I do anything like those three guys, but they all made me love the business even more.
Yeah, well, and I think we can hear a little of all of that in you. You're crank at times.
Yeah. And the older I get, the more crank I get.
Yeah, but you're also adorable and lovable. We know you've got a warm heart. I'm saying this for your edification.
I'm soft.
No, it's not true at all.
But I do feel that we're blessed to be here. And, and I know you're the same way. I go out and I see people or I talk to them.
So you just can't
thank them enough.
So this podcast, what's your next episode going to be?
You know, we're just finding people to talk to who we can do longer form conversations. And like, I know there's people that don't know anything in the last 35 minutes that you and I've talked. They don't know, 10% about you. They know what they hear on the air, but I think this is cool stuff for people to hear. Because as you know, in the podcast world, people search out stuff they want to listen to. They don't listen to stuff that happens to be in front of them. So we're going to have people who are listening to this, who are WGN fans or radio fans, people that don't like us. You know what? Kathy and Judy might even listen.
I hope they do. They sure were part of the legacy. I think that the phrase for what do we say about us right now? When I go to the news at the top of the hour, I remind people to listen to us on their smart device, and I do a plug for you or I do a plug for all.
Yeah.
I think we should say podcasting since 1928.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we invented it. Because that social media since 1928 is a great hook.
Yeah.
Same thing. Podcasting. We invented it. So I appreciate you doing this. I know you have your own show.
Is this the inaugural one?
No, you are about five or six deep.
Ah, gee, I thought I was the first one.
So
you should plug this on social media and get the word out.
That's not a bad call. Could Elif help? John Williams, weekdays 1 to 3 on WGN, and Saturday, what time?
10 a.m. to 12 noon. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Oh, by the way, my podcast, The Mincing Rascals.
Yep.
Talk to some news people, and we chew up the day's events.
And your regulars are?
Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, and your boy Justin.
Yep.
Please don't tell him I said that. And then Eric Zorn and Scott Stannis from the Tribune.
And you have a new episode up right now.
Yeah, they go up every Thursday.
Every Thursday. All right. Thanks for doing this. Yeah, I appreciate it. Steve Cochran podcast. Spread the word. Thanks.